Yeah. It's impressive getting away from simply being a target. Because the if you have a form that's in matter, that exists in matter, it's contracted by the matter, right? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If, however, there are some created forms not perceived in matter, but subsisting by themselves, and this would be the angels, right?
Mm-hmm.
As some think about the angels, right? Okay. And Thomas himself thinks that, of course. They will be, what? Infinite, secundum quid, he says, huh? Insofar as these forms are not limited nor contracted by some matter. So in some way they are infinite. But because the created form, thus subsisting, has existence, but is not its own existence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary that its very existence be received and contracted to a determinate, what? Mm-hmm. Nature. Whence is not able to be infinite, what? Simply like God is, where his existence is not, what? Limited to some nature that's the existence of. Because it's not, he is his existence, huh? Okay, I am who am. Whence is not able to be infinite simply, huh? So it's hard to understand that kind of distinction, right? And but you'll see that kind of distinction over and over again, and gradually start to understand that kind of distinction a little bit better, and see that distinction being used in this particular, what? Matter, right? Okay. But it comes up in the first divisions of being, right? The two main divisions of being are being into substance and accident, and being into act and ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And substantial being is, we say, is being simply.
Mm-hmm.
And accidental being is being in some way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when I came to be a geometer, I didn't come to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was generated, I came to be.
Mm-hmm.
So substantial being is being simply, and accidental being is being secundum quid, to use the Latin, right? In some, you know, qualified way, huh? Okay. Just like when I came in this room, I didn't come to be. That would saying, I won't cease to be, I don't think anyway. I don't know really when I leave this room, but I will suddenly cease to be in this room, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have to qualify. Okay. And it's kind of interesting how when we make a diminution sometimes, like in a person's name, huh? You know, like a child tends to say daddy, you know, or you know. Qualified. I knew a girl, her name was Annette, you know. Annette means what? Little Anne. See, when she got older, she felt for some reason awkward about Annette, that she wanted to be called Anne rather than Annette, huh? You see? But notice how the addition there seems to what? Yeah, you see? Just like you say, a goody. Well, goody's good, but it's not the greatest good. I shouldn't call God a goody, you know, or wisdom a goody, would you know? But maybe a little piece of candy or something, that's a little cookie or something, that's a goody, you know? But that's kind of a diminution of goodness. Huh? And so when I say, when I came into this room, I can't say I came to be. I have to add something, say I came to be in this room, right? So that's kind of a sign they were seeing that it's not so simply, huh? Now the other main division of being is being an act and being an ability, right? And so if I ask somebody, you know, are there chairs in this room? You say, yeah. Are there chairs in the trees out there? You'd say, no, right? And if you wanted to say there are chairs in the trees out there in some way, you'd want to qualify and say there's chairs and ability. There's something in the, you know, the chair and ability. You got to put it that way. Something able to be a chair. But you wouldn't say there's chairs, period. You see, because I'd be saying there's simply chairs out there. Yeah, yeah. So being an act is being simpliciter, and being an ability is being secundum quid. Substantial being is being simply, and the other, right? Mm-hmm. So right in the very first divisions of being, which is most universal, you have this distinction being used, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we saw the distinction being used in regard to the good as well, huh? And they're already reading.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see it's being used in regard to the what? The infinite, no more particular than. Now, the first objection of saying, well, God's got infinite power, so why can't he make an infinite thing, huh? And says, to the first, therefore, it should be said that this is against the definition of the made. That the very essence of the thing made be its own what? Existence. Because subsisting being, you know, being by itself, that receiving thing, is not created being. Whence it is against the definition of the made as such that it be simply and without qualification infinite. So just as therefore God, although he has an infinite power, is not able to make something what?
Not made.
For this would be what? For contradictories to be at the same time. So he's not able to make something infinite simply, huh?
Mm-hmm.
When I was in grade school, that was always the thing they challenged the Catholic with, you know. Can God make a stone so big he couldn't lift it, right? And if you say, yes, then there's something God can't do, lift the stone. And if you say, no, he can't make such a stone, then there's something he can't do also, right? So how can God be omnipotent? Most little minds do not handle this, you know? You see? When you talk about God's omnipotence, it doesn't extend to contradictories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could God make a square circle?
Mm-hmm.
No, but that's not a contraction of his power, because that's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, could God make something equal to himself?
Mm-hmm.
No. Could God make something infinite? Well, contradictory is being made, huh? And it's some like the question that comes up later on, you know, can God make something that doesn't depend upon him for being? Well, no.
If he could make something equal to him, he could.
Now, the second objection is taken from the, what? Reason having a power that seems to be in a way infinite.
Oh, yeah,
huh? Okay. To the second, it should be said, that this very fact that the power of the understanding extends in some way, right, to the infinite, proceeds from this that the understanding is a form not in matter. And even our universal reason is not in what? The body. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
But it's either wholly separated, as are the substances of the angels, or at least the power of understanding is separated from the body, because it is not the act of some organ, as Aristotle shows on the third book on the soul. And this is the case in the, what, understanding soul joined to the, what, body, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Shakespeare in one play refers, some character refers to my understanding soul. That's the anima intellectiva, but in English it's the understanding soul, as opposed to the sensing soul, this beast you wanted to give me.
Yeah.
And when my wife's picking out plants, I talk about the souls of these plants here, you know, all around us. I don't know what she thinks of that, but anyway.
I love it. I suppose if you had a dog named Fido and he died, you'd talk about the soul of the faithful departed.
The soul of Fido will be in heaven or I won't be happy.
When he says quidam modo, I suppose he's referring to the idea of secundum quid, right?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, if I mention how Feuerbach, you know, says the human mind is infinite, the infinite is God, right? Well, it's like you've never seen these distinctions at all. And you make a mistake from not distinguishing between what is infinite simply and what is infinite secundum quid. Moreover, third objection, what about the first matter? Is that infinite? Well, the first matter does not exist in rerum natura. That's the Latin expression we'd say probably in English, in reality, right? Or in the real world. But they use the expression in rerum natura, the nature of things.